Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, December 21st. Happy solstice. I'm asking you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down names, addresses, emails, web pages, and phone numbers so you can take action for the environment. Let's get started with announcements. And the Matol Action Training Camp is going to be held in Northern California on January 12th through 15th. Learn to technical climb, figure out the tactics for blocking roads and constructing tree sits and pods. Join us for skill shares and others, as well as a chance to build affinity and friendship. And learn more about the ongoing campaign to save the Matol, its forest. Forest folks should bring warm and waterproof gear and be ready to camp outside in the rain, though we will be having a secure indoor space for sleeping. Food will be provided by local organizers. If you're interested in any post-camp shenanigans, please come prepared with extra warm gear, waterproof, if possible, backpacks, tarps, a mask, etc. If you want to contact them for further information, it's matolactioncamp@riseup.net. That's the email address, matolactioncamp@riseup.net. And for more information, go to the Earth First Newswire. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration tomorrow. That's Friday, December 22nd. They normally have them on Saturdays, but this one's on Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Winter has graced us with very little rain, beautiful sunshiny days, and cool nights. We have quite a bit of work ahead of us based on a recent recon of all of our French broom sites. I've decided to add some midweek projects in addition to the usual Saturday projects. And how do you get to Quail Hollow Ranch? Go up Graham Hill Road from Santa Cruz. As you come down the hill, take a right at the light. Go up East Ziandi Road for about 2 miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow Road. The park entrance is on the left. Half a mile up the road, meet them in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, area code 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or you could go to her email, which is redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net, or visit the website at www.cruzcnps.org. That's CRUZCNPS.org. And a Yaqui tribe has defended its land by digging up a gas pipeline in this story from Bloomberg News, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A chunk of Semper Energy's natural gas pipeline sits in the dirt behind a community center in the village of Loma de Bacum in northwest Mexico. Guadalupe Flores thinks it would make a great barbecue pit. "Cut it here, lift the top," he says, pointing to the 30-inch diameter steel tube, perfect for a cookout. It would be an expensive meal. The pipeline costs $400 million, and it's part of a network that's supposed to carry gas from Arizona to more than 500 miles down Mexico's Pacific coast, but it hasn't done that since August, when members of the indigenous Yaqui tribe, enraged at what they viewed as an unauthorized trespass of their land, used a backhoe to puncture and extract a 25-foot segment. They left the main chunk about a mile from the community center, perpendicularly to the rest of the pipeline, like a lowercase T. The impact extends far beyond Loma de Bacum and its 4,500 residents. Arizona's gas exports to Mexico have plunged 37% since the shutdown, hitting an 8-month low in December. Mexico's state utility is having to burn fuel oil instead of gas to generate power, raising their costs. And it's not an isolated case. Mexico's opening of its energy industry has succeeded in attracting capital, but it's also been beset by territorial or environmental disputes, often involving the country's myriad indigenous groups. When the protest turns to sabotage, there's a risk that investors will put off from future phases, like an extensive shale development. It's also grist to the mill of the leftist front runner for next year's presidential election, who's vowing to reverse some of the reforms. The Yaquis of Loma de Bacum say that they were asked by community authorities in 2015 if they wanted a 9-mile length of the pipeline running through their farmland, and they said no, but the construction went on anyway. Consultation of the 8 Yaqui communities along the route was carried out as required by law. 7 of them gave a green light, the industry said by email, while the town of Loma de Bacum refused consent. The project is now in legal limbo. IEnova, the SEMPRA unit that operates the pipeline, is awaiting a judicial ruling that would allow them to go in and repair it or require a costlier reroute. If they wanted to build the pipeline, that's fine, said Flores, the would-be barbecue designer who's a local community leader, but it won't pass through here. At Energy Ministry in Mexico City, it's becoming a familiar refrain. As many as 4 pipelines have been stalled or temporarily suspended, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, according to Jesus Reyes Heroles, former energy minister. I can't quote the number, but it's more than that, Heroles said in an interview. He said the stalled projects go beyond pipelines. In some cases, opposition comes from ranchers who are abusing the situation to make some money off of it. And from Canada, an Indigenous grandmother's face arrest for protecting wild salmon in this story from Warrior Publications, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Sathil Qualis was arrested for trespass and released and made this comment. I have been released, but have notice to appear on February 5th, 2018 at 2 p.m. I will post more in a bit. Also, our Fish Farms Out Now page is being followed by the Popo. They had some photocopies made of my posts. We can never think closed pages are safe either. Salud Qualis Ambers, a 65-year-old Ma'amataglia grandmother and an indigenous rights activist from Yali, Alert Bay, faces potential arrest on her 67th day of an indigenous-led all-women's wild salmon matriarch camp occupied outside of government offices, complicit in the demise of the traditional salmon food fishery of her peoples. The occupation, which she began on October 13th at the constituency offices of Premier John Horgan, later moving to the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, is in solidarity with fish farm occupations happening in the Namgis and Muskamag territories, aimed at bringing about an end to a 30-year era of open-net Atlantic salmon aquaculture operating without indigenous consent on territorial waters of the Broughton Archipelago in British Columbia. There is a growing body of scientific evidence confirming what local indigenous communities have long known, that the presence of disease and parasite-infested open-net fish farms on the migratory routes of wild salmon have been a major and undeniable factor in the decline of wild salmon stocks, negatively impacting communities from Alert Bay to the upper reaches of the Fraser River. And Hudson Valley Earth First has had a rally to support a tree-sitting campaign against the Valley Lateral Pipeline in this story from the Earth First Newswire. Members of Hudson Valley Earth First have maintained a tree-sit blockade in the forest right-of-way for the Valley Lateral Pipeline for 7 days, and that was as of December 15th, effectively slowing the environmental destruction and progress of the pipeline construction. These blockades have saved the lives of trees and are the last line of defense for the endangered bald eagles and habitats for Indiana bats and bog turtles. This direct action has braved snowstorms and temperatures dropping into the teens. Hudson Valley Earth First is committed to maintaining these actions for as long as it takes to stop the pipeline and save the bioregion from further parasitic corporate development, but they're also asking for public support. And you can contact them by sending email to hudsonvalleyearthfirst@riseup.net. That's hudsonvalleyearthfirst@riseup.net. You could call them at 845-670-5149. That's 845-670-5149. or you could visit their Facebook page at HVEarthFirst at Facebook.com. That's it on the Facebook website. And in news of their little get-together, Santa Claus came to Wauyanda, New York earlier this year to support the Hudson Valley Earth First Tree Sit campaign and to bring a bag of coal to the offices of Millennium Pipeline. Santa also praised the brave work of the Tree Sit blockade that has stopped and slowed work on the construction of the 7.8-mile Valley Lateral Pipeline for 10 days now. Santa's visit was a highlight of the Hudson Valley Earth First rally to support the tree sit that took place on Monday at 10 a.m. and successfully shut down Millennium Pipeline offices for the morning. Upon his arrival, Santa said, "I have this bag of coal to deliver to the dirtiest, nastiest, most no-good polluter around. I was flying over a while ago, and a lovely and kind person sitting in a tree told me to head this way. They told me that the people that come in and out of this office are destroying forests and disturbing bald eagles, and that they climbed up the tree over yonder to try and stop it. And seeing that to be just about the bravest and most inspiring story of do-gooding I've heard this year, I thought I'd better come over and share my appreciation for their courage by delivering one dirty fossil fuel to another, as this company, Millennium, has trying to dress natural gas up with fancy talks and lies. But the truth is that gas fuels nothing but climate change." And here's a message from the Hudson Valley Tree Sitter. "We need people to come out here and stop work in meaningful ways. They haven't cut these few trees around me, but I've seen so much of their work continue. Every day I watch more trees cut, and every night I hear less coyotes and other wildlife noises as they flee what was once wild. Capitalism and corporate greed will continue to destroy the land and creatures in the name of progress. When all else fails, when the justice system serves no justice and collectives are moved to take direct action, seeing no other options, the state supposedly based on freedom will suppress and criminalize activists. Please come out here, see what the destruction is being done, form a group, and do something about it. You don't have to be a saint to do something good for this earth." And the 2018 Eco Hero Awards are to be given out, but you've got to apply for them. Action for Nature's 2018 International Eco Hero Youth Awards are officially open. We recognize and reward individual environmental initiatives of young people aged 8 to 16 with a cash prize of up to $500, a certificate of achievement, and public recognition. Applications must be submitted by February 28, 2018. Please help us spread the word and share with young environmentalists, organizations, and educators. You can go to actionfornature.org. That's actionfornature.org. And from the Buffalo Field Campaign, we read that emergency action to protect the central herd, end the West Side hunting harassment, and stop Yellowstone's slaughter plans. Yellowstone's central buffalo herd has declined by nearly half since last year when Yellowstone released their report on the status of the Yellowstone bison. There were only 847 buffalo remaining. Now that hunting has commenced, fewer than 820 remain. This subpopulation of the last continuously wild migratory buffalo has been in seriously dire straits and is continuing to decline at a rapid pace due to the nefarious actions of the state of Montana and Yellowstone National Park. In a little more than a decade, government capture, slaughter, harassment, and hunting has reduced the central interior herd to less than one-fourth of its original size. The status of the central herd is so dire that Yellowstone bison biologists are recommending that state and tribal hunting cease in the Hebgen Basin west of Yellowstone National Park, where the central herd exclusively migrates. This hunting closure suggestion will likely be met with resistance by hunters and hunt managers, so it is imperative that we raise our voices and be heard for the herd. But Yellowstone cannot place the conservation burden on hunters alone. The central herd migrates both west into the Hebgen Basin and also north into the Gardner Basin, where Yellowstone's Stevens Creek buffalo trap is. It is irresponsible and unjust for Yellowstone biologists to suggest hunters cease to kill when they intend to capture for slaughter or removal hundreds of wild buffalo this winter, knowing that many of these buffalo will be from the central herd. Aside from a few radio-collared females, they will not know which buffalo are from which herd. Yellowstone's capture operations kill hundreds more buffalo than hunters do in the west and north side combined. If Yellowstone moves forward with capture for slaughter operations, they will be neglecting their responsibility to the buffalo, ignoring the tragic shift that they recognize and have directly caused, and will be placing the bulk on the conservation burden on hunters, especially the five tribes hunting under treaty rights. Finally, for the few survivors that remain in the spring, Montana must also cease hazing or harassing buffalo and let them roam in peace. And they're asking you to please take action and go to their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org to find out more information. And that webpage again, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And snow leopards have been spotted in eastern Tibet for the first time in this story from Mother Nature Network. Elusive snow leopards have been seen prowling around eastern Tibet. The animals were spotted via infrared cameras set up along the Najiang River Valley by the Chinese Shanshui Conservation Center. The area is one of Asia's few remaining wild rivers where there is minimal human development like dams, according to the Daily Sabah. We have captured images of baby leopards with their mother, which indicates a certain quantity of the rare species live in the region, Zhao Zhang, head of the Shanshui Conservation Center, said to the Xinhua News Agency. The possibility of more snow leopards being present in the area may indicate that conservation efforts are working. Classified as a vulnerable species by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, there are an estimated 2,500 to 10,000 snow leopards left in the wild, with about 60% of the population residing in China. Their elusive nature and the general remoteness of the habitat makes this precise consensus difficult. And an extinct marsupial has been rediscovered after 100 years in Australia in this story by Noel Kirkpatrick of Mother Nature Network. The tiny, adorable, and aggressive marsupial has been rediscovered in the deserts of Australia's New South Wales state after not being seen for more than 100 years. The crested-tailed mulgara has been known in New South Wales only from fossilized bone fragments, but was discovered in Stuart National Park during a scientific monitoring expedition. The find was announced December 15th. The crest-tailed mulgara was once widely distributed across sandy desert environments in inland Australia, but declined due to the effects of rabbits, cats, and foxes, ecologist Rebecca West said in a statement released by the University of New South Wales Sydney's Wild Deserts Project. The crested tail mulgara looks like a cute little rodent. It weighs about 5 ounces, has sand-colored fur, and is easily identifiable black crest on its tail, according to West, but don't let the cute factor sway you. This creature is quite the hunter and has been known to attack prey much bigger than itself. This particular mulgara still thrives in a few other states in Australia, including the deserts of central Australia, but the number of crest-tailed mulgara is difficult to determine, according to Science Alert. In 2005, the crest-tailed mulgara and the brush-tailed mulgara were believed to be the same species. Genetic testing, however, confirmed that they were different, with only a few readily apparent differences. While they're both roughly the same size, 12 inches or so, and the same color, the crest-tailed mulgara has the aforementioned crest on its less bushy tail and has 8 nipples compared to the brush-tailed mulgara's 6. The crest-tailed mulgara is considered vulnerable in the Northern Territory and Queensland, endangered in South Australia, and until last week extinct in New South Wales. And people of India have banded together to save a trapped leopard in this story by Noel Kirkpatrick of Mother Nature Network. Everyone needs a helping hand now and again, and a leopard that fell down a well in an Indian village was no exception. The adult female leopard fell down the 30-foot well and had been there for a number of hours on December 14th before residents of a village near Guwahati in a city in the northeastern state of Assam found the leopard. Rescuing a leopard trapped in a well required some planning and more than a little bit of courage. Luckily, a veterinarian was more than up to the task. After sedating the leopard with a tranquilizer dot, Bujoy Gogoy descended into the well using a ladder. Gogoy then secured the leopard in a harness, and while people on the surface pulled the leopard up using a winch, he pushed the leopard up from below and out of the well. The entire rescue operation took 2 hours. After the leopard was saved from the well, it was taken to the Assam State Zoo. The leopard was reportedly not injured from her ordeal. The rescue stands in stark contrast to other reported leopard incidents. In January of 2017, a leopard was chased through an Indian city, during which 35 people were injured. It had been 60 years since a leopard had been seen in that area. More recently, a leopard injured 8 members of a village in November and was subsequently beaten to death. Leopards are a protected species in India, but habitat loss and poaching have played part in driving the animals to more populated areas. Poaching in particular has been a cause for concern, with 53 of the 131 leopard deaths in India during the first 3 months of 2017 attributed to poaching. And an endangered loggerhead turtle is the latest victim of Balena's shark nets. And this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society in Australia. On the morning of Monday, the 18th of December, the Apex Harmony crew were out documenting off Lighthouse Beach in Balena when they spotted a turtle entangled in a net. Upon closer inspection, it was found to be a live endangered loggerhead turtle. Queensland coordinator Jonathan Clark contacted New South Wales Department of Public Information immediately. However, the smart drumline contractor who was in the vicinity came over to the net and assisted in freeing the turtle from the entangled mess. New South Wales Apex Harmony coordinator Alison Jennings said once again the nets have indiscriminately claimed a loggerhead turtle, and had our crew not been there for this animal, it would almost certainly have died by drowning. Is this what we want people around the world to see? That we kill marine life to provide a false sense of security for marine users? It is a peak breeding season for loggerhead turtles, and every individual counts. Mr. Clark further added, our crews have found 7 non-target animals in the nets in 6 runs within a week. These discoveries and the data from the first trial are solid proof that these nets are nothing but a failure in terms of safety for ocean users and are killing marine life unnecessarily. It's time the Balena Shire Mayor David Wright and the New South Wales government wake up and start accepting the findings from the State Senate Inquiry report that these nets are ineffective for ocean safety and have tarnished our image as a nature-loving country locally and internationally, said Ms. Jennings. And a victory for indigenous rights in Brazil as a court revokes the license for the Belo Sun mine in this story by Christian Poirier of Intercontinental Cry. In a powerful victory for indigenous rights in Brazil last week, the Toronto-based company Belo Sun Mining had its license to drill revoked by a federal court, dealing a significant setback to its efforts to gouge a megamine into the banks of Amazon's Xingu River. In a unanimous ruling, the court cited Belo Sun's failure to uphold the right of local indigenous communities prior to consultation on the project's complex social and environmental impacts, which would compound the destruction already wrought by the adjacent Belo Monte hydroelectric dam. It also ordered the company to carry out an indigenous component study to measure the project's specific impacts on indigenous communities and territories, and stating that a new licensing process will not be considered until Belo Sun has undertaken all of these measures. Last week's victory is especially notable in a region that is already reeling from the devastation of Belo Monte, a megaproject dam that steamrolled human rights, environmental protections, and the rule of law to drive a wall of concrete across the mighty Xingu River. As Belo Sun's Volta Grande gold mine appeared set to follow the Belo Monte's notorious path of rampant illegality and corruption, the determined efforts of local indigenous peoples, Brazilian federal prosecutors, and NGO allies have thrown up a formidable roadblock to the multi-billion-dollar project. This ruling is a rare instance of justice for the indigenous peoples of the Lower Xingu River, who suffered immeasurably during and after the construction of the Belamonte Dam. As their forests were razed, the river's once abundant fish disappeared, and their communities suffered what one prosecutor terms ethnocide. Given the dam's impacts on local peoples and their ecosystem, it is essential that the Belo Sun continue to be held in the highest levels of accountability by Brazil's judiciary. The court's decision is also highly notable for setting a new legal precedent by ordering Belo Sun to conduct a consultation adhering to a culturally appropriate protocol defined by the Xuranga indigenous people. The company is now obligated to follow a rigorous framework that will considerably complicate its plans. These are precisely the norms enshrined in the ILO Convention 169, to which Brazil is a signatory, that Belo Monte's proponents were infamously allowed to sidestep before building their dam by the Brazilian government. We do not accept any project that distances us from the Xingu River or undermines our ability to stay on river, reads the Juruna Protocol. We were not consulted for the construction of the Belo Monte Dam, which redirected the Xingu from our land to use its waters for the production of energy. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon, Fridays at 3 p.m. If you're in North Adams, Massachusetts, you can listen to WMNB 107.1 Fridays at 5:30 in the morning. In Moscow, Idaho, listen to KRFP 90.3 Wednesdays at 3 p.m. In Olympia, Washington, listen to KOWA 106.5 in Saturdays at 7 a.m. In Dade City, Florida, listen to WLSL 92.7 Sundays at noon. Or you could tune in to KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, or Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 in Berkeley, California. Those stations all broadcast the Earth First Update. Please check with them for their date and time. Or you could go online to the Grateful Dread Public Radio. That's online at gdprnashville.org, where they broadcast the Earth First Update at Sundays at 2 a.m. Or you could always go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can listen online or download anytime you want to. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It's free to download and to broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening. Please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update. And happy solstice.